Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to season 13 of the Parenting Aces podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I am so excited to have Danielle Lau back with us this week. It's been a little bit since Danielle's been on the pod and since I've caught up with her, but she has been up to some really exciting stuff in the world of tennis, in the world of running, in the world of junior coaching, and I'm so excited for her to share all her latest endeavors with all of us. I've been following her on socials for years now and just recently noticed her foray into junior coaching, and so reached out to her and invited her back. And of course, as always, she was very gracious and very excited to come chat with us and let us know what she's up to. So before I bring Danielle on, just a quick reminder, we would love for you to become a premium member of Parenting Aces. All you have to do is go to our website, parentingaces.com, click on the join button, and you have lots of options there for you. Also, if you are already a premium member of Parenting Aces, make sure you're taking advantage of everything that offers, including your complimentary consults one-on-one with me. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with former USC Trojan, current junior developmental coach, current running enthusiast, Danielle Lau.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's so great to see you, Danielle. Welcome back. And thanks for taking time out of your crazy busy schedule to chat with us.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So for my listeners that for whatever reason have had their head under a rock and don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of your background, how you got started playing tennis and how you kind of transitioned from juniors to college to pro?
Got it. So for me, my tennis story started when I was 7. It was a complete accident. I was on a vacation in Mexico. My parents had a timeshare meeting to go to, and instead of putting me in some sort of daycare, they left me at the tennis courts to take some lessons so that the coach can look after me for a few hours. I was a golfer at the time, actually. And when I came back from vacation, my parents enrolled me in some group lessons. Group lessons became private lessons. Private lessons became a tournament. And to be quite honest, I didn't really love tennis in the beginning, but I won the first tournament I ever played. And the moment the tournament director put that trophy in my hand, I fell in love with the game. But I think I fell in love with winning, actually. And so, like, since then, I've just had like a competitive drive just to compete and to just be better than yesterday. And one thing led to another. I think at around 10 years old, like, and my dad told me this story, pretty recently. He said, like, you know, when you were 10, like, you were watching Pete Sampras at Wimbledon. He said, Dad, I'm going to be there one day. And I was like, I did? He's like, yes, you did. And I'm like, wow. Okay. So I guess I've had that professional dream since I was younger. And when I was around 15, 16 years old, still had that professional dream, but just knew I wasn't ready for the tour yet. So I decided to think a little bit about college and went to USC, had a great 4 years there. But at the time, the tennis culture was a little different. It was like you choose college or you chose pro. And if you went to college, the professional route almost seemed like you hit a dead end there. So when I graduated college, some people asked me, are you going to play or not? And even then, there was still some like hesitancy in terms of like, well, I went to college. Does that mean like my professional dream is dead? But I started to interview for some jobs, a lot of asset management companies, even had a job offer. But it was for a position in Wisconsin and I couldn't leave California. Had a few job offers with insurance companies as well. Just didn't feel right. And like my heart was still for the game because I was still hitting for money on the side. And I just loved being on court. And so I just decided to start competing and had some pretty good success in the first few months when I started on tour. And maybe a year into it, I told myself, okay, let's restart this dream. Maybe we can make a slam. And it took about like 3-4 years for me to make my first singles Grand Slam qualifying. And I qualified for the US Open on my first appearance in the qualification rounds. I did it back to back years. And wow, what a dream. And I was able to qualify for Wimbledon too. That was another dream come true. And now I was on tour for a decade. At the beginning of this year, I just felt I needed something different. And, I wasn't really sure what that was. Was it tennis? Was it not? Was I ready to move on with my life? I'm not sure. And, an opportunity to volunteer at USC, my alma mater, you know, kind of fell in my lap. And I swore to everyone I would never coach. I swore that when I finished playing for myself, I was going to leave nothing on the table in my tennis tank, but I was very wrong. I ended up loving coaching and I love sharing my experiences and giving back to the sport that's given me so much and hopefully giving back to the next generation a little bit. So that's what I'm kind of knee deep in right now. I'm trying to figure out like where I fit in this coaching space. I've done a couple of things, well, not a couple, more than a couple. So I volunteered at USC. I was a USTA summer collegiate coach, got to work with the top college girls over the summer, coach privately. And now I'm also helping the Pete Brown program, a nonprofit in LA, start to get their program off the ground and bring some more competitive players to that program as well. And yeah, so I'm just like kind of a big juggling act right now. I love to run. I do some of that too. So
yeah, you've got a lot on your plate right now. And I like got goosebumps listening to you talk about this transition into coaching, because I think it's so cool when somebody is able to realize that what they thought they wanted isn't necessarily what they wanted, and what they thought they didn't want, maybe mm-hmm. they really do want. What convinced you to give coaching a try? And why were you so against going into coaching while you were on tour?
I think I gave coaching a try. It was almost just like the start of my tennis is a little bit of an accident. I just wanted to give back to the school. and spend some time there. And my calendar freed up because I just needed to take a break from the tour. So it just seemed to be, you know, something that I should do. And I got into it, and yeah, it just ended up really enjoying it from the start. I remember I was volunteering for a month, and some days I would be at school 8 to 8, and I'd wake up in the next day, and when I was ready to go, it just didn't feel like work for me, because it, I guess the sport, when you're in it long enough, it's not even a sport anymore. It's like breathing. I couldn't be without it. So just in enjoying it in a different capacity. It's been a little mind blowing for sure, because I've been a competitive athlete for a very long time, but to experience the sport in this way, it's made me realize there's a lot more to look forward to than you can ever imagine sometimes.
Yeah. So why were you so anti-coaching mm-hmm. before this?
I think like I just saw how difficult it was, like as a player, and I felt that like I had already put so much in to my own career that I was going to leave nothing left in the tank. Like if I was able to still coach, that means I didn't lay it all out. Like I didn't have enough of tennis. Like I did, but they're two completely different tanks actually. So I was wrong. I was wrong to think that way.
It's like having a dessert stomach, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You could be so full, but there's always room for dessert. It's a different stomach.
Yeah, exactly. So far, what are your favorite aspects of coaching?
Oh, favorite aspects. There's so many. There's so many, but if I were to talk about like what gets me so excited to coach, it would be like I want to give this generation everything I wish I had earlier on, like maybe just the knowledge of fitness and recovery and like perspective, how to learn how to build your game and not just live week to week, like all these things that you acquire, all the knowledge and experience that you acquire over long periods of time. Like I want to share it because I wish somebody shared it with me or articulated it like that to me or made it known to me when I was at the younger stages of my career. And I've really worked hard to be able to communicate that in a unique way, not just tell somebody, that like, you know, for example, the importance of building or having training blocks, but to paint a picture for them, to show them like what it looks like without it and what it looks like with it, because I've experienced both ways. So like perspective and like sharing that knowledge, you know, the knowledge that you can acquire over a long period of time. Like that's probably the one that gets me up in the morning really excited.
I love that. You recently started running, and by recently, it's been probably 3-4 years now, right?
Yeah.
And I've read some articles, some interviews that you've done about your experiences with running and the things that you've learned through running that have kind of crossed over into tennis for you, and lessons that you felt like with tennis being an individual sport and running being more of a communal activity, there was a lot of crossover and things that maybe you missed as a competitor in an individual sport that you learned in this communal activity, but that really benefited you as a mm-hmm. tennis player. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because here at Parenting Aces, we're big proponents of cross training, of kids not specializing too early in tennis, not letting go of the other activities that they love, and that there's always something to learn from every single thing you do that can help your tennis down the road.
Yeah, no, that's a loaded question, actually. Like for me, the running thing was just a social thing to start, just to have an activity outside of tennis. And I've made a lot of friends in the running world. So that's where it started. And as I progressively got more proficient at it, it brought a lot of other intangibles, like, for example, the fitness and even the mentality to be able to do something boring for long periods of time. Like, I felt like that, that really helped me mentally on the court, to be a little bit more mentally strong and to be less fragile, to not let like certain discomfort or even your heart rate through the roof at 160 really bother you. When you're constantly training at that, in the running world, all of a sudden you're not phased on the court as easily. So it's been a cool crossover. And in terms of the community, I really do love like the cohesiveness there. It kind of reminds me of when I was in college a bit. Yeah. Being on tour for a decade, it's intense. It could get lonely. But
the last time I had you on, that was kind of the focus of our conversation. You had published an article, I think, about being out there by yourself and missing your family and how much it meant to you when you could play in locations where your friends and family could be there to cheer for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And being a huge like college tennis advocate, I love that type of energy. I love like anybody cheering. It could be against me. I just want that energy and and that like attendance. So for me, like being in the running world, it was filling a void that I kind of had in the tennis world. So yeah, it's been really cool to stay in the running world and to try to make this crossover also. I think I'm slowly having that impact on some of my friends. Like a couple days ago, Sabrina, Caitlin, and Juliana, they came to Run Club with me and they really loved it. And they're saying, we're coming back next week. So it's been really cool.
That's really awesome. That's really awesome. So you started by coaching at SC. You've kind of transitioned into working with juniors now. Is it a huge difference coaching college girls versus coaching kids that are still in development?
Yes, it is. I like to separate it a little, separate it in this way. When you work with juniors, you really do work on your communication. You have to be very clear. And with college and professional players, you really train your eye. You have to see things a lot closer. Things happen a lot quicker. And you have to be a lot, you know, in tune with that. So coaching both levels has made me a better coach, actually. When I work with the juniors and I take whatever I learned there to the college players, to the professional players, like I've really refined like my communication on how to get a certain point across and also how to read if somebody is getting it or not, and to take a different route, maybe take a different perspective or word it a little bit differently for the player to connect. So both my junior and like college players benefit from that. And on the other hand, when I work with a college player / pro player, my eyes are a lot sharper. So when I take that back to the junior level, things are very obvious for me, like when I'm watching something. So I think both working with both levels is pretty cool.
What about the differences working with females and males?
Females, thus far, I feel they don't mind the one-on-one time. They actually like it. The boys, they like to play against each other a little bit, especially being a female coach. Also, I do feel the boys, they have respect for me, but they also want to like knock heads with another guy also. So that is like the difference. I do think the boys have a little less attention span for a private, around the ages of like 13 and 14. So they're a little bit more switched on when there's another peer in front of them.
Interesting.
Girls, I've noticed they don't mind. They do a little bit better with the focus in the private, but then like when you get them to compete, they're a little bit shy, more shy also. So like there's a give and take with both, right? You have to like convince the girls like that they should go knock heads a little bit. Like you're encouraging them to do that. And with the boys, you're trying to encourage them to, you know, here's some like fine detail here that you need to pay attention to. Let's feed like 50 balls there and you've lost them by ball five. And so there's the difference, and both are challenging in their own way, but you know, whatever is challenging makes me a better coach too.
So I love that. There's been a lot of talk about how we need more female coaches in our sport. What are you finding out there now that you are on the coach side? Are you noticing a real shortage of other women out there coaching, or do you see things trending upward in a positive way?
I think we're seeing more of it now, but I do feel it is still lacking.
Why do you think that is?
I'm actually not sure. Might be just a social ladder thing. I don't know, but I do feel that I've been hearing some like great feedback. I just recently finished a camp where my whole staff was all female, and we've gotten a lot of great feedback that like, wow, it's so awesome to see, you know, six very successful, strong women come together and put on a camp like this. So to hear that feedback, it tells me that there's more of it being wanted out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess also the other part is just like court time. You know, maybe women want to start a family, and it's a little tougher to be, yeah, to give that court time and to have that like consistency, like for the players, which is not just like something like we struggle with in the coaching world. It's something we kind of struggle with in general in the professional world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you tell your former teammates, your former, you know, competitors on tour that you've transitioned into this coaching side of things, are they surprised? Are they disappointed? Are they interested in learning more? What kind of reactions are you getting?
I think for the most part, everyone's really supportive. There's a handful of people that think I should go back and play.
I mean, you're young enough to do that still.
I am. Yeah. And another handful of people who are curious why I stopped too. And some people think, were you injured or what happened? I was like, oh no, the body was fine. The tennis was great. But just like mentally and emotionally, I didn't feel aligned with what I was doing. And I haven't really said like really put out the retirement word yet. I tell everyone I'm on a break, but this might be a permanent break. I'm not sure. Yeah. And for me, I'm good with calling it that, because I've been a competitive athlete for so many years. If I want to take a break for 2 years, like I'm going to take a break for 2 years, like, and call it a 2 year break. And right. I have no shame in doing that. But for sure, it was tough to sort through in the beginning, you know, sort through my own thoughts. And then like, yeah, everyone's got their own opinion on like, you know, whether I should continue to play or should I completely move on from the sport? So, it's been a mix of things, but for the most part, the people closest to me are supportive of what I'm doing right now, because I think the ones closest to me also knew that I have certain goals that I still wanted to achieve as a professional athlete that I haven't achieved yet, but they knew at the mental state I was back then I wasn't going to achieve it anyways. So this makes sense at the moment.
It takes a lot of self-awareness to first of all be able to articulate things the way you just articulated them, but beyond that, to then be able to act on that and pull back and try a different pathway that, you know, may or may not bring you what you're looking for. Where do you think that inner strength comes from?
I'm not sure, but thank you for that compliment. I think it's just respect and love for the game, and just knowing how difficult it is. to do what I wanted to do or to achieve what I want to achieve or to continue to play at the level that I was striving to play at. I know what it takes. And I knew if I wasn't 150% aligned with everything, it wasn't going to happen anyways. I think it's a little delusional for people to think that you could be kind of like midway in and hope for the best. No, this is a tough sport. To be elite in this sport, it is so difficult. And if you're not like mentally and emotionally aligned, like it's not going to happen. And I'm just understanding that. And again, just respecting how difficult this sport is and knowing it over a long period of time. Yeah, it was tough to admit, you know, that self-awareness, but it was very, after a little soul searching, it was very obvious actually. So
I talk a lot to parents when I, you know, talk to them one-on-one and through the podcast too, but about how important it is for the parents and the players to understand that if they say they have a goal, to understand what it's going to take to achieve that goal, and mm-hmm. then to commit to putting the work in to achieve that goal, and then to be held accountable to that commitment, right? It's a process. To me, you know, in junior tennis, there are kids that are just great athletes that find success without having to work all that hard to be successful. College tends to call that out. The pro tour, it doesn't exist without the hard work, right? There's no way to be successful without that hard work. When you finished at USC and transitioned into full-time professional tennis, what was the biggest challenge for you as you were, you know, getting your feet wet on the pro tour? And I know you played some professional events while you were still in college too, but transitioning to full time, I am now a professional tennis player. This is my job.
Mm-hmm. I think it comes in two folds. Yes, it's hard work, but And people think I'm nuts when I say this, like the hard work and the practice, like the training and the tennis, that's the easy part, actually. It's the sacrifices. It's the finances. And they kind of go hand in hand, too. When I got on tour, like the full commitment to do everything I possibly could to move myself in that direction to succeed. And that came down to things like living at home because I need the extra money to be able to invest in my tennis. Like I was 22 years old. I could have easily had gotten my own apartment, pay rent every month and like, you know, have that like independence, but that was a want and not a need. And like, I was very clear on my vision and what I wanted to do as soon as I committed to it. And I was able to separate what was a want and what was a need. And to move my ship in the direction that I wanted, there's a lot of sacrifices that needed to happen with scheduling, with family events. Like a lot of them were wants, but not needs. And down to the finances too. Like that's tough to deal with because I think when you're playing professional tournaments and you're in college, you have a little like insurance, you got a little cushion. School's probably paying for a lot. Some schools will even pay. Now they'll pay for you to go to these tournaments and support you. Right. But it's a completely different story when you're like, I'm 4 years on tour, living at home, hardly making enough. And guess what? You're going to go into this small town in the South. And let's see you perform. You spent $500 to get here. Can you make enough? Can you make enough? And like, can I afford a coach next week? Can I afford a coach for the next 6 months? And the fact that I don't have a coach or I can't afford a coach, is it going to am I going to be able to build properly? Like, all these things are conversations that people don't think about sometimes. And these are all like the little stresses that you have and all the little things that you're contemplating on that plane ride that you're, and it makes you question so many times in your career, is this worth it?
And then you have to set all that aside so that you can be an effective competitor.
Yeah. And try getting on court and thinking about all of that. No. And it takes a great amount of strength to be able to put it aside. Another way to put it is, like, for you to succeed as a professional athlete, it takes two things. It takes the proper environment. And the other half is, can you afford that proper environment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that other half is sometimes the biggest battle everybody faces. They know the environment they want, but can they truly, like, create it? Do they have the resources to create it? That's half the battle, actually. And, like, can you be successful enough to have enough resources to continue to create it? It's an endless cycle, and that's a lot of stress over a long period of time. And to compete under that and to always take those things into account, that's what makes the sport so difficult.
Yeah.
The training in the tennis, yes, it's difficult, but not nearly as difficult as the other stuff.
Interesting. Can you talk a little bit about your parents' role in all of this? As, you know, as a junior player, college kind of parents have to take a big step back while your kid's in college, and we get that. But then once you left college and went out on the tour, what is their role then? And now that you've transitioned into coaching for the short term or maybe the long term, how do they feel about that?
So my parents were super supportive throughout my junior tennis, but it's always been driven by me. I don't know how many times my dad told me, he's like, are you sure you still want to play? Because we could stop right now. Like, I'm tired of giving up my weekends. Like, I'm happy to, but we don't have to continue if you don't want to. But I've always wanted to play. And yes, they took a backseat a little bit, and they were just a bit more spectators during my college years. But yes, when I turned pro, like, I needed help from my parents to start. You know, and for a long part of my career, like, living at home, that's helped for my parents too. I know it didn't cost them anything, but it definitely helped me to not, like, have to pay rent, every month. So without their support, there's no way it would have happened. Impossible. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. And I've told a lot of junior parents this. It's like, It's a team effort. It's the sacrifices your kids are going to make, and it's the sacrifices you are going to continue to make too, to get them to wherever they want to go.
Right.
And it's a long long period of time too. It's not like a training block. No, it's a life thing almost. Yeah. Until they want to stop. So make sure you guys are doing it for the right reasons, because it's a lot of sacrifice.
I was chatting with some people yesterday, actually, who are recreational league players, adult league players, and don't have kids in the sport and aren't really familiar at all with junior tennis development. They both came to tennis as adult players, and they were asking me about, you know, what does it cost to develop a junior player? And I was throwing some numbers out, and their eyes just got giant. They were like, you have got to be kidding. So, like, you do this so that they can get a college scholarship and that pays back for all of that? And I'm like, oh no, the college scholarship it's not a return on investment financially, not a chance, but there's so many benefits, right? That you get out of it. And I think it's important that parents understand that this isn't a financial investment you're making for some repayment down the road. This is a life skills investment. This is a relationship investment. This is an investment in the overall human development of your child or children.
Mm-hmm. 100%. It's funny, when I was offered my full scholarship to USC, a lot of my cousins told my dad, hey, like, you don't have to pay for college. And he would tell them, you know, we are just breaking even, actually, to get Danielle here. We were just breaking even.
Yeah.
And he's always said, like, it was never about trying to get a scholarship. It was that she loved to play and it was a great experience.
Yeah, I love that. It sounds like your parents really had a very sane and mature approach to your sport and the relationship with you, and understanding the hierarchy, right? Like, the relationship with the child is at the very top. The success in the sport is so far below that. It's so unimportant compared to this relationship. And the fact that they've continued to show you the support as you've gone through these different phases of your career is really so wonderful. I mean, just it warms my heart, because to me, that's what it's all about. Great.
Yeah. I mean, I do. Of course, nobody's perfect. But for me to still feel this way about the game,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure that plays a big role in it.
Yeah, for sure. So for those that are listening to this podcast and not watching it, they can't see that you're wearing a Hoka hat and a Hoka pullover.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, there it is. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, wow. My Hoka partnership was, I just got so lucky with this. It, again, a complete accident. I had, and I still am, I'm sponsored by Picky Bars. I had a great partnership with them, still do. I was partnered with them for 5 years, and they came out with a new flavor that was going to be chocolate and mint. And they said, hey, we need to put a character on this bar. So would you like do us the honor and be like the person on this bar? And so I was like, absolutely. Yes. Like, I've always wanted to be on a Wheaties box, but I will settle for this. Like, this is amazing. And so I had done some promotions with them, and especially with one of my good friends now. Her name is Julia. And like, so we worked together in promoting the brand, promoting the bar and such. And eventually Julia left the company. And we kind of lost touch for a few years. And I started wearing Hokas. I'm like, man, I really love this shoe. I want to approach them and just like, I want to see if I could get lucky and say like, hey, can I have like, can we do something together? Like, I promise, like, there is a space for this in the tennis world. Like, I could feel it. And so I was on LinkedIn looking up like their staff, and I saw her name on the as a Hoka employee. And I reached out to her and I was just like, Julia, let us work together. And she's like, absolutely. And so, since then, like, I've been positioning myself to try to help Hoka have a presence in the tennis world from a cross training standpoint. They're not quite ready to make a tennis shoe yet, but that will be in the pipeline, hopefully sometime soon. So
primarily a running shoe company, correct?
Yes. Hoka is a running shoe company. They started off with trail and hiking shoes. They make great road shoes now. And now their focus is like trail, road, and lifestyle.
Okay.
At the moment. But you know, as tennis players, we cross train a lot. And so, I was able to kind of impress upon and influence my friends to start wearing this shoe, even my tennis friends, and they love it. They love Hoka. We all love Hoka. So that's my Hoka story. I create some content for them, some fun content for them. I go to their events, help them promote some stuff. And I love
your videos where you're like selfie running. They're awesome.
It's so funny. I feel like people are making fun of me sometimes, but I think they're really serious. Now people are like, let's go on a run, D-Lau. And I'll be like, really? You want to run now? And they'll be like, we want to get in on a selfie. And I feel like people are kind of trolling me, but they just want to get in on a selfie. And it's But anyways, it's my 0.5 selfie. I guess it's like my trademark now. Everyone thinks, people used to make fun of me of flipping my phone backwards, but now it's
a thing.
It's become a trend. It's become a thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So what's next for you? Are you going to continue to work with USC, or are you going to focus mainly on juniors, a combination of things? What are you seeing for yourself in 2024?
Yeah, so for me, no plans with USC right now. I am helping the Pete Brown program quite a bit. This past Thanksgiving weekend, I threw an amazing camp with some of my best friends, and like it was just a tennis party for 3 days. I would love to put on a few more events like that just to bring the community together, you know, attract some high level players and see where that goes. And, you know, offer these opportunities that are at low or almost no cost to the community and do it alongside like people I'm really fond of. Like that's like a great way to like position myself in the coaching world. I do have some private clients on the side that I'm looking to build. And so just like slowly chipping away at those players. And for me, when I take on a player, it's not just a lesson, right? I had a conversation with a player the other day, and she was new. And I said, like, you know, you're not just a lesson. You are an operation, a whole project. Like, we're thinking big picture. So like, you got to tell me like what you want, what's your goals, and then we'll come up with a plan. Like I'm not just trying to teach you forehands and backhands here. It's a full operation. So for me, that's how I attack it as a coach. And that's what gets me like excited to, you know, to help create, like I said, the environment it takes to succeed. Because if you take all that into account, it's more than just the stuff on the court. It's the cross training. It's the tournament scheduling. It's even perspective.
Yeah.
You know, watching matches, how is he or she handling stuff under pressure on court? So it's the full picture, because for me, I approach coaching as if I care for their game the way I cared for mine. And for me, that's what lights me up at the moment, alongside having these fun camps with my friends. And I do have some Hoka content coming up that is coming out in January. I'm pretty excited about it. We have a cool project going on. So stay tuned.
I love it. I love it. Do you ever see yourself getting into coach education?
Actually, that is what I am doing at Pete Brown. I am coaching the coaches to help kind of the pipeline. And then also like they're more advanced players. Like I will take those like privately. But yeah, to coach coaches, to consult coaches. Yes, I do quite a bit of that at the moment. Actually.
That's so good to hear, because all of the things you just said about how you work with a player are, to me, what separates a great coach from an okay coach. And I feel like the coach education that we have in this country is missing that. And I'm so happy to hear that you're providing some of that, at least in your arena up in LA. I think that's so great. Mm-hmm. If people want to work with you, are you taking new players? And if so, how do they reach out to you?
Oh, I am... There's a wait list at the moment.
Like, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. But I'm so busy right now. I'm like really selective with who I'm working with, because I'm also trying to leave space in the day to have those like camp projects that I'm doing. My heart of hearts, I don't want to be just a teaching pro too. I want to facilitate like the game of tennis, right? And like in like a cohesive way, in a community. I want to cross it between like, you know, tennis and running. I want to bridge that connection. I want to be able to consult somebody on their like on their whole career, even leave space to work with somebody professionally. So my hours are so limited, actually. But you can reach out to me on Instagram and we could see if there's an open slot. But holy moly, like right now, I wish there were 30 hours in a day and a lot more sunlight, actually.
Yeah, the limited sunlight right now is no good on a lot of levels. But yeah, this dark at 4:30 thing, not my favorite type of time of year. Mm-hmm. But anything I haven't asked you that you want to share with the Parenting Aces audience before we wrap this up?
No, I think you were really thorough. This was a great interview.
Oh, good.
A great podcast, a great conversation.
Good. Well, it's always a treat to talk with you. And I have, you know, continued to follow you since I first learned about you years and years ago. And I'm so proud every time I see your content. I'm like, this is somebody who gets it. This is somebody who loves the game and who has this gift for giving back to the sport in a way that feels welcoming and inclusive. And I think there's just so much more on the horizon for you. I'm excited to see what's coming.
No, thank you. I guess the one thing I'll leave the parents with is, like, you got to think about the environment and the experience and the winning and the success. That's a byproduct of what you create. Right. So if you think about, like, the environment and the overall experience, the success and the happiness, that's all a byproduct of, like, you working to create that. So that would be my last thing. And that's what I live by too.
Yeah. I love that. Danielle, thank you so much. Can't wait to see what's next. I will keep following you, and you're welcome back anytime. If maybe when this HOKA announcement comes, you'll come back on and we can talk about what's going on with that. This episode won't air till January, so it may already be a thing by the time this is live, but I'd love to check back in with you about it in a couple months.
Check back anytime. I'm always happy to jump on.
Perfect. To my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.